Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Stella Luna, an actual play producer, consultant, and GM known for her work on Beyond the Brook, Our Lives After, and a host of sponsored one-shots for companies like Soul Muppet Publishing, Studio Hermitage, and so many more. Stella Luna, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hi. Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's great
to
have
you
here.
Thank you so much for being here.
It's so great for our first video episode. If you're looking all around, if you're just listening to this, you don't know, but this is our first foray into a video podcasting episode. And This beautiful overlay that is all around me was designed by none other than Stella Luna right here.
Whoa.
Hello. Thank you. Wow.
So we want to talk about this all around us for our video listeners, video viewers. It's new. We want to get into overlay design, specifically this overlay design. But of course, this is also a podcast, and we want to get some good info out there for all of our various consumers out there of Talk of the Table. And so, one of the things we want to get into is streamed actual play as a concept, as a form of doing actual play. And our first question for you on that front is, by your measure, what makes for a good streamed actual play? What is sort of the par for a good streamed actual play, however you want to define that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I like to consider with actual play versus like a podcast is the huge difference is the visual element. So generally being able to see either VTuber representation or someone's face, just kind of adding that extra layer of being able to perceive a medium, essentially. And with actual plays, being able to emote with your hands, sometimes even dressing up as your character, showing off props, it can really add to a performance just because you can see it. And with the actual play space, there's just infinite possibilities. Some people even like take it to a studio, for example, or they might be doing it remotely. So it's pretty diverse, pretty robust.
It is a world that we haven't explored too much on this show. We just end up focusing so much on podcasting and pre-recorded actual play, just because it's the area that we focused on. And so we haven't looked at this like much more live element. And I'm curious from your perspective, from a performer perspective, what is more valuable for a streamed actual play versus a pre-recorded actual play? Like, are there things that people bring to the table that just help that kind of performance so much more?
Ooh. As a performer, I love bouncing off of other people at the table. We use a lot of safety tools, so we know exactly where everyone's boundaries are of what they want to pursue and what they don't want to pursue. And deviously enough, whenever I'm playing with people and it's a very emotional scene, I always want to like, yes, and keep a finger on the pulse, push it, and just to see how deeply we can explore what's going on. So being able to see them, it's like, ooh, Elliot's about to break. Elliot's about to start crying. What's the most devastating thing that I can say right now? Because I can incorporate timing. I can incorporate even acting on my end too. And it's just really fun to be able to like read an additional energy of how someone is rooted in a scene by being able to see them visually.
I'm going to do a thing that the audio listener won't be able to fully appreciate because this is going to be part of the demonstration in that when we're recording like an actual play podcast, there will be moments when someone is thinking, but they're thinking visually. So it would look, again, for the audio listener, just bear with us on this. We're figuring this out. Mm-hmm. But it would look something like, and you can see there's so much happening behind, you know, the emotion and that pause. But the second you don't have video on it, that is just dead space that has to get cut. Otherwise, everyone's thinking like, what happened? Did someone's audio cut out or something? Whereas in video, you have that just extra thing where you can do so much more with silence because there's an extra sense that you can now use that replaces hearing for that silence. You can communicate so much with so little that you just simply can't in podcasts, which is a real boon because I do a lot of this.
Yeah, especially if it's like a really heavy hitting moment and everyone's just holding their breath, waiting for your response. And you're just stewing over it, thinking, processing, and then you deliver the knife, you know?
It is really nice to be able to convey thinking or convey thought in a way that, that usually gets cut out in actual play unless someone is hemming and hawing on a podcast a little bit. For actual play for podcasts, we've talked a lot on this show about like the kind of technical expertise you will need at various stages, whether that is just editing, sound design, what tools you will use, what tools are helpful, what tools are not necessary. But for streaming, I don't know that world that well. What are some of like the kind of baseline technical necessities that people should know, people should be able to operate? And then kind of what's the next level up of like, hey, here are the tools that will take a little bit more time to learn, but will be very helpful in making this a better and better show?
Yeah. So I think for it really depends on what you're trying to do. There is no one template of what is right or what is better for everyone in general. It's easy to get into. You can literally just use like a Discord video call or a Zoom call and just put that up and record that, screen grab it if you need to. And you could keep it just at that if you like. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But for me, I like intentionality and I like to consider what you see on the screen as a canvas and just making conscious decisions of how do you want to present information, what information is extremely valuable. And especially since I do specifically live stream content, what is helpful for someone who has never seen the show, that doesn't know what's going on, and it's their first contact with it? Whereas if something's pre-recorded or if it's uploaded onto YouTube, generally someone has loaded that content and they've chosen that content. So it might be, the context might be a little easier to get into. Like, you know exactly, oh, from the description or from the title, what this is versus jumping into a live stream. So I think the display of the information can vary and have different impacts depending on the method of what you want to do.
Yeah. How do you sort of think about accounting for the people where it's like, I showed up 10 minutes late to the stream and now I missed the intro bit? What are the ways that you're making sure that person doesn't dip out?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways you can do it. You can have some contextual information on the screen of like what people are playing, the name of the game, the name of the system. But for people who want additional information, you can pin messages in the live stream. So you can have like a Google Doc that has a synopsis of what's going on, or you could even just add like a command and be like, hey, use !info for like a 1 to 2 sentence description of what's going on or what kind of show that they're watching. So there's ways to like have that information highlighted.
I didn't know you could do that. That's right. I'm so not in the streaming world. So I truly have, I'm coming in from almost zero. And that's very cool. I'd love that for podcasts. That'd be great.
Yeah. And if you have like set shows where it's going to be the same show, the same campaign every week or whatever cadence that you're running it, you can also add panels, which are little information blurb boxes underneath the video content. So where on like YouTube, you would scroll down and see the description. Instead, you can literally customize the information there. You can add pictures, you can add hyperlinks, text, whatever fits your needs. And a lot of like regular shows will generally have a little blurb, so you know exactly who the cast is and what you're watching.
We end up talking a lot on this show about like big leaps forward or like the future of actual play. And that's the thing we've talked about a lot in like the podcast, in the pre-recorded format, in the podcasting format. I'm curious from your perspective, being much more into the streaming actual play world, what over the past like couple of years have been the biggest leaps forward, either like technically or performance-wise, or just like noteworthy benchmarks that you're like, ooh, this was a step forward that now like is moving everything a little bit further down the path?
In my experience, the sort of bottlenecks that I've experienced as a producer, you might have to choose between accessibility and quality. So dropping a Zoom link and just having everyone connect to it and their cameras are working, it's pretty easy. It's pretty low level accessibility there. Whereas some of the more high-tech stuff, which could include Riverside, which could include using Video Ninja, where you have the higher quality feeds and everything is saved like on separate tracks, that requires some video editing. That might be a little more involved, but you are guaranteed to have the higher quality. It'll capture the camera and all the crispiness, and you won't have that like degradation of the quality of the images. So I feel like there's been a lot of progress on trying to bridge the gap between the two so that you don't have to choose one or the other, but it's definitely still a ways out. The way that I have to produce a lot of my actual plays, I'm pulling from different things that I've kind of cobbled together. Live transcriptions have become more and more accurate over the years. But for example, a high quality production that I'll use Video Ninja for the video. I'll use Discord or Clean Feed to capture the audio. And then I'll have everyone load up into Google Meets and we'll use the Google Meets as a live transcription. And so it's like having multiple things open, it isn't very accessible for someone who's brand new. They're like, oh my gosh, this is overwhelming. It can be a huge info dump to someone who's never done it before. And that's a huge difference than here's a Zoom call, just connect to it.
And the load on like even just the internet, you know, on that is kind of is crazy.
Oh yeah, especially because not every player that you have part of your production is going to have hardwired internet. A lot of people rely on Wi-Fi. And for live streaming, Wi-Fi is the worst option. It is unstable and you're going to see a lot of quality loss from it. And it can be a big ask to be like, hey, I need you to be plugged right directly into your router. And that can affect the quality.
It is great to see the, I always love seeing kind of the levels of things. Like you can do it at this level, you can do it at this level, you can do it. And here's like, here's the height. So it's almost like, hey, the baseline is you need a Zoom or you need some kind of video feed that you can, you know, go to. What's it, the second I master that? What's the first, like, what's the next thing I could upgrade and like see, you know, to improve my quality or whatever? And then what is like that top level look like? It's always very fun to see that, like that path upwards that people can take. And like, you can stop at any point along the trail. But if you want to get to this like upper echelon of quality and technical proficiency, what those steps are.
The highest level quality is always going to be pre-recorded and everyone saving their stuff locally and you getting a video editor to edit everything. It is the most labor intensive. It takes the longest time, but you're going to have the chef's kiss of content level of quality available to you.
When it comes to like streaming, one of the things that always almost stresses me out a bit as like a performer is the idea of the chat and the live audience that has input and interaction. What is the benefit or maybe drawback of like engaging with that during actual play? Like, what does that look like? How have you like seen the different spectrums of how much like chat and the audience is involved in the actual production?
Yeah, so I think it boils down to what you are trying to do. There's different ways to handle it. You can live stream pre-recorded content. You can include chat into what you're doing. For my different productions, I will generally, before we even go live, have an idea of what kind of cultural interaction we want to have here for certain things that are like, this is supposed to be professional and sponsored. It's, I think, a little inappropriate to kind of like bring up, oh yeah, Dude Man 69 in chat said blah blah blah, you know. So it might not be appropriate
for certain
stuff.
Classic Dude Man 69.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a great guy. You should get a beer with him sometime.
He's got two kids, you know. He's a family man.
But like for something that's like a weekly campaign, if you want to cultivate kind of like a couch vibe, or you want to have that relationship with chat involved, you can easily bring it up and be like, oh, Dude Man had a great idea. What if, you know? And that's like, it's as a viewer, as a person who has been in chat for streams like that, it's always really fun to have that connection, because it's like, you have to ask yourself, why are you live streaming this? Is it just to put on a performance? Totally fine. There's no wrong answer, but it's there. If you want to do something with it, you can. And why not? You know? Yeah. So it just depends on what you want to do.
It really does come back to and this is the thing we just talk about so much on the show, and I know you brought up as well, it's just like having that intentionality of knowing, going in, okay, just be honest with yourself what you want this to be. If it is just performance, great. Interact with it in that capacity. If you want it to be a growth, you know, artistic thing that gets better over time, great. Interact with it in that capacity. But the more specific you can get going in, the better off you are.
Yeah. And there's also ways that you can do it where it doesn't necessarily interrupt or break the flow of a show. You can, like, as a warm-up before we get into the session, just hang out with chat and just talk with them, you know, or like an after part of like decompression, just get chat involved. There's different ways that you can handle it as well.
And so I feel like one of the things that plays into this intentionality and this like leveling up is overlay design. And that's sort of the thing that we windowed a bit at the start that is all around us is a Stella Luna original overlay. And the thing that Brian and I were talking about we really like about this is that it's like one of those like subtle but very effective tools. And like similar to we talk about with sound design, like when sound design is really good, people don't notice it, but they, you know, they experience it. And I feel like that's the same thing with overlay design. By your measure, what are the keys to a successful overlay design for Streamed AP?
Okay, so the most important thing for actual plays, in my opinion, is always going to be audio quality. If you can't hear them or it's really hard to understand what they're saying, it's going to be very difficult to consume the content. The second thing is readability. Using fonts that are going to be accessible to people who have dyslexia, who have perhaps not English as a first language. Just you have to consider like the different people who might consume it visually, what their experience is going to be like. It can be really easy to be like, oh, this really fancy, you know, very artistic font. It's awesome. I want to throw it onto the overlay. Well, it's kind of useless if people can't read it. Like maybe you know what it says because you punched in the letters, but from someone who's never seen it before, if it's like too bright on a bright background, et cetera, that can really kind of make the whole point of it useless. And then for like spacing is really important too, in my opinion. You have a whole canvas, it's a whole painting. Utilizing it in a way where you get the maximum amount of information and use out of it, I think is really, really helpful. Of course, you can go artistic with it. There actually have been a couple of overlays that I've done that don't maximize the space, actually. One of them is the overlay that I did for Gudia, where it predominantly features a woman's face and it has small, like, photograph frames where the cameras are, and they're distinctly placed because that was a production of Bluebeard's Bride. And so everyone was playing a different part of the same person. One person was the ear, one person was the hair, one person was the mouth. So we had them like juxtaposed to this much larger face. And then the face over time like began to fall apart and like stretch out, right? So it was a lot more artistic and definitely not a conventional overlay, so to speak. But, you know, the intentionality, it always goes back to that.
That I remember that overlay really well. It conveyed so much. Like, you don't even have to know you don't have to know it's Bluebeard's Bride. You don't have to know the vibe of the game. But, like, you look at it and you're like, okay, I know kind of what's going on here. Like, you get a sense of it.
Oh, this is, like, the perfect time to talk about it, actually. Because you look at it and you might not realize as a consumer, I made 42 variations of that overlay because the different pieces going into different places, and then it also had different backgrounds as well, which might be very subtle. It's not meant to be like very in your face, but essentially like one background had a lot of hands, another one had some eyes. And so it's like, it was so much work, but I think in the end, it like, you know, came together really, really well. But you might not know that unless, you know, you make an overlay and you deal with every building block piece.
It is good to call out because that is like, again, the kind of like top end of the depths that you can delve into one of these worlds of like, you could just do one overlay and it's a static thing and it could be gorgeous, or you could do many, 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 and allow that to help tell the story in a totally different way.
Yeah. So for this overlay that you see here, we have a couple of different configurations where we have multiple cameras. So for ease of use, I have provided you the files of the flattened PNGs. So all you gotta do is just slap that bad boy onto a 1080 canvas and you're good to go. You don't have to worry about layers or moving anything around. It's super, super easy. But like a subtle thing that you might not notice off rip is with the different configurations, I've set it up so that the borders are exactly the same size on each of them. So it isn't like I've taken a frame and sized it down. I've actually customized every single one of them so that they're the same size. That way you have a uniform look between every single configuration. And it just kind of is like a really subtle thing that people might not notice off rip, but it adds uniformity. It makes it a little less jarring when you're transitioning. Like, for example, it's like, okay, the three of us are on the screen. What if we switch over to one person? Mm. Or we switch over to the view where we're showing a slideshow, etc.
This is going to be great because I know Elliot has to do the video edit and you've now queued multiple edit points.
All right, show the one frame, two frame, three. No, I'm kidding.
So in terms of this overlay that you've developed for, or this particular one, this three frame one and all the other versions of it, what elements did you think for this show, which is a relatively simple show, were important to include in this overlay?
Yeah. So for this overlay, especially because y'all will have different people coming on, I've made the nameplate extremely simple. I've added just the banner here. That way you can customize how you want to present the information. So if you want to have someone's name, if you want to have their handle, if you want to like rotate through it, you can do that as well. I've left intentional space at the top and some space at the bottom as well. So when this is put onto YouTube, if you wanted to auto-generate captions, there will be space on the bottom for the captions. It's not going to cover over the names of the individuals. And then at the top, as per your request, there's space for the name of the episode underneath the talk of the table title. And then also there's space on the right-hand side where if you wanted to have a rotating image to show off whatever you like, QR codes, links to various things, call to action, that is an intentional space for you to do with whatever you please.
I'm excited to play around with that, at like it in the edit and stuff, like what that adds to the show for those who come watch on YouTube. That's really fun.
And actually, for anyone who's interested in learning, we're going to keep talking about this, but everyone who wants to dive into like our Elliot and I's discussion with Stella about like exactly what we wanted, we're going to be sharing a thing over on our Patreon. Where you can become a member for just $5 a month and support the show and get a whole bunch of cool other stuff. Diving into our exact conversation of what we wanted, why we wanted it, and Stella guiding us to what we did and didn't need. I think it could be really helpful to anyone who's interested in commissioning someone to make an overlay or just wants to learn more about like overlay design, what is and isn't useful. Because, for instance, I never would have thought of, oh, let's plan where the automatic generated captions are going to go. It's not a thing you'd think of until you do it and realize, ah, shit. I'm covering over, you know, Matt Mercer's face with these automatic generated captions.
I learned the hard way. So
are there any other like you learned the hard way? Are there any other like tips or hard lessons you've learned about overlay design where you were like, oh, I really beefed this in the beginning and now I know?
I wouldn't say there's anything glaring because I am of the opinion that there's really, like, other than just considering accessibility for people, I don't think there's any wrong way to do an overlay because it is such an artistic expression. I will say that readability is definitely very, very important. And then also, I'm a huge personal advocate for putting people's names on things. I think it's very, very important, especially for live streamed media where someone might pop in, they won't recognize some of the people that are on the screen. And having someone's handle available near their face, I think is just so helpful for someone to be like, oh, I think they're really funny or they're really cool. I want to follow up and see what other stuff that they have done. And having someone's name can make a huge difference on, you know, just making that more accessible.
I kind of keep thinking of Overlay a bit as like your cover design for a book. And it's like, I think the thing that I've been putting in my mind more recently is like, I think the phrase, you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, is kind of wrong. You shouldn't judge a book only by its cover. But we did put a lot of work into the cover. So judge it a little bit by the cover. And the more information that you have on that, and like you said, the more accessible and readable it is, the more I get out of it and can make a more informed decision as a viewer of something. If I just pop in, all of a sudden I see the name of the show, the names of the people in the show, the vibe of the show. And all of a sudden I don't have to stay very long to understand if this show is for me or not. And that's just a great boon to a potential viewer.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I also think a fine line between too much information and not enough information as well. You don't want to overload it and have like a whole biography on the screen, especially because it's going to be extremely difficult to consume and it might take away or be kind of a distraction. It's kind of a balancing act, I think, is the best way to kind of approach it as well. So one of the things that you could do, it's like, okay, I want to have their name and their character's name and their character's class and their handle and their pronouns. And like, just, you know, if there's a long list of information and it just won't fit, there's ways around that you can do that. So like, for example, on the nameplate, you could save like my name, my pronouns as an image. And then you can create a slideshow where another image is my character's information, and you can have it basically like transition and change over time so that, you know, it's not just a static display of information. You can rotate that out too.
GameFound is inviting you to participate in their second RPG Party, a curated event designed to help indie TTRPG creators bring their projects to life through crowdfunding. Whether you're working on a zine, a 600-page collection of tomes, or something more esoteric, this is a unique opportunity to move forward with real support, visibility, and expert feedback. Applications will be reviewed by a panel of judges from GameFound and industry partners like Darrington Press, Modiphius Entertainment, Free League Publishing, and Magpie Games. 15 to 25 projects will be selected to receive workshops with industry experts, marketing support, one-on-one mentorship, and a community of fellow designers to grow together. Open call for submissions lasts from May 5th to 26th, and crowdfunding goes live this fall. Let this be the push you need to manifest your game in the physical realm. It's going to be challenging, there's going to be stress, and if you're able to put in the work, it's going to be so incredibly rewarding. Go to gamefound.com/blog for more information and to submit your project today.
This episode was brought to you by the World Builders Club, a project of Working Families Power, an organization building power for the multiracial working class. The World Builders Club is your go-to dispatch for breaking down the political, cultural, and emotional architecture behind your favorite universes. From romantasy novels and TTRPGs to blockbuster franchises and indie gems. This isn't just pop culture analysis. It's a love letter to the art of creating worlds and the power those worlds have to shape our own. I'm a huge fan of post-apocalyptic world building, so I recommend starting with their piece, We Can't Stop Watching the World End, which talks about properties like GLaDLands, Fallout, and Silo, and what they have to say about humanity and our ability to imagine a world after the apocalypse. But any piece on World Builders Club is going to be a great read for those of us who love to imagine better worlds. So join the club and build a better world with them by subscribing at bit.ly/WBC Many-Sided or by searching World Builders Club on Substack.
Hey, you! You don't look familiar. First time in this part of the city? I see that sneer on your face. Better wipe it off before I do it for you. This is home. This is the best place you could ever want to be. Whether or not this is where you meant to end up, you found yourself on a rather fortuitous street. You see that corner building down there? 3 floors up. Lamplight Investigative Services. Friends of mine, you ask. Loaded words you're throwing around this evening. Good people is what they are, though. Not a single one of them will admit to being nice. Something about duty, yada yada. A bunch of BS, if I do say so myself. Who am I? No need to worry your pretty little head about that. I'm sure my name will come up in time. But go. See for yourself, 3 floors up, gold-gilded sign. As for Mama, don't tell him I sent you. She'll know what to do.
All doors are just windows that we can't see through. You ever think about that?
We provide our patrons with anonymity.
Hello, this is Mama Amoretta speaking.
Lamplight Investigations, a Thirsty Sword Lesbian's noir mystery. Full season available now on QueerPG.
So I think I want to transition a little bit from like overlay design, because that's one of the things you do. You're also a performer and you're also a producer and somebody who puts together a streamed actual play. And I want to get into this role of producing actual play and how you approach it. When it comes to a new show, where does that start for you as a producer?
So I'm a huge advocate for sharing every information that I have and how I do it, because I learned the hard way. No one taught me how to do anything, and I basically just had to like fiddle around with stuff. So I actually have a flow chart that I've shared publicly with people. Let me see if I can pull that up for you real quick. That way I can...
And then Elliot can put it on the screen in the edit. Wait a minute. We even have an overlay that has a bonus box over here in the corner that could just have this while we're talking about it.
This is going to be especially awful for you because it's a bunch of text. So you're going to have to zoom in.
Elliot, I feel like this is a moment of payback for all the times that you guys have called out like, ooh, here's this weird sound design thing that now Brian has to do.
Yeah.
So I've sent you the image. It's literally a flow chart of the two basic pipelines that I have, where it's doing the actual visual production and then the soft production of managing people and making sure that they're prepared for the project that we're going to be doing together. So I've kind of like laid it out visually in a way where it breaks down literally every single step that I do. It is generally like something that I have to do a month in advance before we do an actual stream, just to make sure that we get every single thing done. The biggest thing to me is just making sure that your cast feels prepared. And I mean, the pipeline does get reduced like if you have a set cast. But this is assuming that a casting call is part of it, because I like to think of it as a easy way to get people to know about what's going on and just kind of casting a net. And I love working with people that I've never worked with before, just to broaden horizons for everybody that's involved.
This is very cool. I just pulled up the image. This is rad.
Yeah, this is really good. Can we link to this for the audience? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I have it up on Blue Sky, so nice. I can give you the link to that.
So check out that link for sure. There's so much good stuff in here for like you could follow this, and if you did nothing else, you'd be in really good shape.
I think so. This is from years of trial and error. I've been added to productions where I don't know what's going on. I don't know what the timeline is for stuff. And I made a solemn swear to myself where I was like, I'm never going to let anybody feel this way ever again. So this is my pain written down in a timeline format.
That is the thing that I got like drilled into me when I was working in television production as an AD, of just like the amount of communication and the amount you have to like think. So like if you're going to send out a call sheet on a day, it's like, great. Where do people go? Where do people park? how do they get from where they're parking to where they're going? What are all the local trains? How do they get from the train? Like, it's like you really have to start at the person who knows nothing and try to give them every single step to get to where they need to be. A, just because that's kind and nice and helps them as much as possible, but also gets you a much higher chance of success that they get to where they need to be in the manner they need to be so that you can have a great production. And it is just a thing. This document is going to be a huge help to anyone who's never done it before, but it is the thing that you're just going to have to slowly learn no matter where you start from. You will forget a thing and then you'll realize like, oh, right, there are people coming from a ferry and I didn't give them directions from the ferry and they don't know how to get here anymore. Now the director's late.
Right.
Yeah, there have accidentally... So I'm a huge advocate for if you post a casting call, you send an email to every single person who applied, even if they're not part of the cast, because I want to respect everyone's time and I don't want them to hold on to the feeling of like, maybe I'm in it, but I didn't get any information. I didn't get a yes or a no. So like, I have been there where I've accidentally forgotten to close a casting call and then I've posted who's on the cast and like that feels really bad. So it's like, oh, I messed up one time. I make a point to make sure that doesn't happen again. So it's okay if you make mistakes. We're not perfect. You know, it's hard to remember everything.
I love that like so much of your learned process is about people management, because I think that's so much of the job as a producer is just like people management logistically and people management emotionally, making sure that because it's an artistic sort of thing, right? Like it's like people are coming on and they're laying bare either negative, positive emotions and for the sake of entertainment. So making sure everyone feels taken care of, that's really great.
Yeah, absolutely. And communication. So hard for everything, but it's just so crucial. The difference between having someone step in feeling prepared and feeling unprepared can, you know, that's a lot of stress. Yeah. That can affect performance. It can affect everybody's mood.
Yeah, I know just experiences where like you don't feel prepared for a thing and how much you have a pit in your stomach going into the day. And then it's like, I know that I'm not going to be my best performance self today. I know I'm not going to be... Yeah, that's tough. Like part of this people management is this idea of a casting call. And this is one thing that like I always see you doing for, you know, sponsored streams and non-sponsored streams. What do you think are like the main benefits of this like open casting style that you generally go for with productions?
Yeah, my favorite thing is meeting new people. Especially, so I read every single application that goes through, even if it's people that I've seen multiple times or I've already worked with, just to get updates on what they're up to. And the benefit of having a casting call is I have this list of people who are interested in this content. So in the future, if I'm running something similar and if I need to reach out to people, I already have that information available. And it's just kind of like stored on my own personal like Rolodex of these people were interested once. Maybe I'll try reaching out to them again. Because there are definitely productions where I've skipped the casting call. I've gone straight to hiring people that I've chosen by hand. And it's applying to a casting call, if you've never done it before or if you're new to the space, I know can be really, really daunting. But for people who are brand new, like they might feel like numbers really matter. But like for me, it's the tenacity, the determination. If I see your name multiple times, I'd be like, okay, John really wants to be on one of these streams. I'm going to send an email to John and maybe even just do an icebreaker. That is something that I also do. That's, I guess, like not advertised publicly very much, is if there's people that have like similar interests as me and is like looking for more opportunities in these that don't get cast, sometimes I'll set up a little meeting. I'm like, hey, let's do a 15-minute meeting. Like, let's meet face-to-face, you know, on camera and tell me about who you are. And let's get like a vibe check. And that has proved to be very helpful, especially because I think it's really easy for people to just, oh yeah, I'm just going to hire my friend or I'm going to bring on the person that I've seen in 20 different actual plays. But I feel like that doesn't really help grow the space because when I first started, someone gave me a chance, and that's how I've been able to build it up all these years.
It is also good to underline just from that, like, especially for people who are applying to be in like casting calls, a no doesn't always mean a closed door. It means a no for this production, which in yes. for many, many things doesn't have any bearing on who you are or your level of skill or competency or notoriety or whatever. It's just that here was this game. We had a certain plan for it and you didn't fit that exact plan for this one. Doesn't mean you won't fit for a later one.
Absolutely. A lot of these casting calls, I'm like, oh, 100 people have applied for this. I can only choose 4 of them. And I'm just agonizing over like the different short lists that I've made. I'm like, I really hope this person applies again another time. It's so hard to choose those people. Oh my God.
Where does that choice ultimately come down to, if you don't mind going into, like, what is like the thing that you're like, this is a good performer for a streamed AP?
Yeah, so that is a very, very diverse, it's a very difficult criteria because it really depends on what the game is. I will always look for information where people talk about their passion and what they're really into. So if I'm playing something that's like Star Trek adjacent and someone is like doing like Star Trek cosplay and, you know, like posting about it, then I want that person in the game. I want someone who's fiending over it, right? Rather than like lukewarm. And like some things also, not everyone plays sci-fi, not everyone plays historical, not everyone plays horror. So like that plays a really big part in it as well. Having a portfolio or a video reel makes a huge difference because then I can kind of get your vibe and the chemistry that you have at a table. And that really helps me with the casting call process. But it ultimately just boils down to like how you put yourself out there. So for the individuals that are like brand new and just starting, that's the reason why that I go the extra bit and try to set up a call with them, because then I can ask them those questions. And sometimes if time allows, I'll even be like, hey, let's do like a 5 to 10 minute role-playing scene where tell me about your favorite character. All right. And then like I'll just GM something real quick and just throw things at them just to see them in you know, in character to try to show off a little bit.
Wow. I love how much care you give everyone in this process. That's like that's very admirable. The amount of time you clearly spend on it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's just, you know, it's 20 minutes. I don't do it every single week. I don't do it every single day, but you know, when I have a slow week, it's like, why not? You know, I want to meet new people. And honestly, that's how I started. Like I didn't know anybody and someone sat down with me in a call and for an hour, they're like, this is how you use OBS. And I was like, oh, thank you. You know, so it really went a long way for me. And if I can help out with just 20 minutes, why not?
Kind of looking towards, again, the like future of streamed actual play. I'm curious from your perspective, what do you think the next couple of years will hold in terms of like where things are going? I'm thinking particularly at like the upper echelon of people doing this, of people who you look at as being like, ooh, this is the most exciting and interesting thing. What elements do you think are going to be changing or evolving over the next year or two?
So the software that we use, such as Zoom, Discord, Video Ninja, CleanFeed, Riverside, all of these different ways that we capture video, either in pre-recorded stuff that we live stream or just literally live streaming, they're all going to increase in quality. They all, you know, become more stable and more resource friendly over time. So that will definitely improve. And it has. I think, though, for actual play and live stream specifically, I feel like there's probably going to be a lot more studio recorded stuff, too. Especially with the popularity of TTRPGs just growing with every year. I know of some places, some platforms that are looking into like going to their local theater and like utilizing spaces like that for recordings. I think just as the word of TTRPGs gets more and more out there with every year, we're just going to see a lot more creative stuff just pop up.
Yeah.
Probably I can't even guess what the new norm is going to be. Because like just in the last few years, I remember looking at like the D&D category, and a lot of it was just straight up using Zoom. A lot more people use overlays now, and I'm super into that because you get to see a lot more information that way, especially because you get to see like generally like character art as well, which I'm a huge fan of.
And, I think you're low-key responsible for that, probably, at least in part.
Make things pretty. I love it.
So, Stella, one of the other elements that you focus on in terms of producer is finding ways to fund all these projects. And you've worked with a lot of different companies, like we listed at the top, Soul Muppet, Studio Hermitage, a bunch more. What advice can you give to someone who's looking to approach a company to sponsor a one shot or some kind of actual play? And what are the things that you think are most important in that outreach? And then also in the kind of delivery, in the delivery on that actual play?
This is actually something that I get asked a lot. And I actually would like to point people, if it's okay, over to Frivolous Bear Studios. So Draconix, Hamna, and I have worked together at Big Bad Con a couple of years ago. We ran a workshop that literally covers this topic. And with Frivolous Bear Studios, we were actually able to make video like workshop kind of content. And that's going to be available over there. But to kind of like talk about it here, there is like no one way to do it. It really depends on what you want to do with what you've got. So there's like aspects of you can reach out to potential sponsors to help fund things. You can also reach out to crowdfunding. You can reach out to local communities. And like you can try to apply to grants. It's actually really fascinating the different avenues to funding actual plays that is growing over time. A lot of like colleges actually consider this to be like new media, and there you can actually ask for like grants and scholarships through colleges as well, the various programs that they have. With like particular sponsors, you can try to work with the publishers, you can try to work with media companies, PR companies. So like, for example, for Our Lives After, we had a couple of different sponsors. We worked with two map companies. We worked with Hero Forge. We worked with two design studios, such as Blackbird for Revolt and Storyteller's Nest. And then we also worked with a shop called Weird Works, where they do a lot of like really spunky, really artistic TTRPG merch. So like, it's just like a wide spread of like all these different kinds of sponsors. And it goes to show you that like, you can really put your feelers out there for like dice companies, merch companies, a bunch of different ways to try to get people to sponsor and help with the productions.
And kind of on the back end of that, once you have secured a sponsor, and ultimately, like, I mean, the goal likely is to have that sponsor come back again and do something with you to kind of continue that relationship. How do you look at making sure that that relationship grows and expands? And how do you make sure that that sponsor feels like they've gotten their money's worth to a certain extent, or have done something that is impactful to what they are trying to do?
Making sure that the two of you are on the same page when you're working on the project, even before the project, is really important. Trying to find mutual goals and keeping those in mind will absolutely help with your long-term relationship with sponsors. Just because like sponsors will, of course, it depends on the sponsor, but there are different reasons that they might want to get involved with a production. Whether it's like trying to get as many people to kind of, you know, become exposed to their connection with you, or it could be for advertising. It could literally just be goodwill. Maybe they don't even have a reason and they just, you know, think it's a cool idea. So just having a really strong pulse on why they want to get involved, and then just authentically and genuinely trying to incorporate that into the decisions that you make, I think really goes a long way. Authenticity, I think, is the most powerful thing with relationships with anybody, performers, your peers in this space, and then also for sponsors as well. Because you have to remember that the people who are funding things are also people, and they have their own things that they need to satisfy. So for example, I love to sing praises to sponsors, even when I'm not actively working with them. Like, genuinely, the people that I've worked with, I work with them not because like they offer the money, but because I love what they are doing. I love how they take care of people. They're great. And I'm like, hell yeah, let's make something awesome together.
It is always good to remember that, like, no matter how big a company you think you're working with in the TTRPG space, that is a small ass company outside of Wizards of the Coast, which is still a relatively small company. Everyone is going to be like, still, they're trying to do everything possible to make this thing work and make their like livelihood. So it is important to always remember that, I think, in the back of your head. But I really do love what you said about just always being a fan, always helping, even when there's not a reason to, or there's not a financial stake to it or something. Like, you'll see our, you know, social media accounts, anytime we see anything Orbital Blues, we're like, this is great.
Yes.
Go check it out. God. You know,
I love Soul Muppet. All of the wonderful people that work there are fantastic human beings, and they come up with such cool shit. Oh my God. Please, please check out Soul Muppet.
And we're not even paid to say that. We just want to
we're not even being paid.
I know, I just saw like today or yesterday, Ray Chow from MythWorks posted a TikTok or some short form video that was talking about how he viewed networking and what that is and isn't. And when he started, he thought it was like kind of asking people for things and like getting into a community where you could get things from people. And as very quickly he learned, like, no, that's not what it is at all. It's what can you do for people even when there isn't a stake for you, and having, creating a community where you're doing things for each other in that way. And eventually those things, you know, kind of come back to you tenfold, whatever you want to call that. But having the ability to just like, hey, I want to help out my buds over at Soul Muppet because I love what they're doing. And at some point in the future, like, they'll look at that kindness and that friendship and be like, oh, hey, let me help out my friends at Many Sided Media. Always like pushing forward rather than seeing what you can pull away from is a great way to look at, especially this community that is, we always joke that everyone's tossing around the same $5. Like, you know, maybe throw an extra dollar in the mix. Then all of a sudden we're talking around $6. You know what I mean?
And then there's also other ways to do it too, because it doesn't always have to be financial. There's other material support, literally like doing giveaways. That's another way to help productions as well. And then also trade swapping. So sometimes I'm like, I'm not a video person, so I can't cobble together an MP4. I don't know how to do it. So what I will do is I'll hit up my friends who are video editors. I'm like, hey, I don't have the budget to pay you, but do you want like X amounts dollar worth of like a graphic suite for your next production if you do this video for me, right? So it's like just like the swapping of labor of like, hey, I'll do this thing for you if you do this for me. But of course, making sure that it's equal and or potentially like, you know, trying to give a little extra for their consideration as well. So like there's other ways that you can support people. And then also like reposting, quote posting as well. Super, super helpful. Comment on all the stuff. That is like the secret, like quiet way of helping out people. If you think it's cool, please like, subscribe, leave a little comment, send it to a friend. That goes a huge long way and it doesn't cost anything.
I always like to remind people that like the more, especially with like social media stuff, the more personalized the thing is, likely the more valuable it is. So like liking a thing is great. Retweeting a thing or reposting a thing, great. Quote reposting it, now you're adding your own thing. Now it's more valuable. Commenting, huge value. Sending it to a friend is like direct word of mouth. Like the more personal you get with those things, the more support you are showing, even though it doesn't cost you anything. It's not a big thing, but those little things really, really, really do add up.
Yes.
So, Stella Luna, our last question that we ask everyone who comes on Talk of the Table, and now we'll ask you, is what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking for a recommendation for our audience that can be anything and everything under the sun. Does not have to be tabletop, does not have to be games. Stella Luna, what would you like to bring to the table today?
It's super easy to plug my own stuff, but I want to throw it over to Navar. Navar is going to be taking Sooth Wardens out into Quick Start really soon, working together with +1 XP. So I definitely recommend keeping tabs on that.
Hell yeah. We will link to that in the show notes.
Also check out Navar's other game, The Corrupted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, check out The Corrupted. It's very cool. Stella, thank you so much for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And also, you know, what they need to do to contact you if they're looking to get a great overlay like one of these.
Hi, I'm Stella Luna. You can find me all over social media at Stella Luna or Stella Luna TV. I am a TTRPG producer, performer, and also graphic designer. So if you want to get some TTRPG overlays or live stream overlays, you can always check me out on social media, or you can send me an email at stellalunatwitch@gmail.com. Thank you so much for having me on here. This was an absolute blast. And if you have any questions for overlays, just feel free to message me. I am always a huge advocate for sharing as many resources as I can. I want you to make all the cool things. So it's all yours. Take it. Use it. Show me if you make something cool.
So please reach out to Stella. Stella is fantastic. And if you want to hear a little bit more from our conversation with Stella Luna as we were like commissioning these overlays, check out the Many Sided Media Patreon. Become a member of either our Talk of the Table tier or the Dice Pool, where you get access to absolutely everything Splash. We make. Splash! Including bonus roundtables, this additional conversation with Stella, bonus actual plays, original music, a few original games that we've created that are maybe playable, who knows? And so much more. It is the most direct and helpful way to support this show and help us keep making what we're making. And as always, if you want to talk about this episode and all episodes of Talk to the Table, check out the Many Sided Media Discord. We have a lot of great conversations in there about making and producing actual play, TTRPGs, and a whole bunch more. Rate, review, and follow Talk to the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.